your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield.
Well, good evening, Charlotte. How are you doing?
Pretty good, George. Pretty good. It's a beautiful day here in the Midwest.
Okay. Well, that's great. I'm glad. We're going to be discussing some of our own views of 9/11. This is the 20-year anniversary of that horrendous attack on the World Trade and the Pentagon and so forth. And we're going to be giving our own commentary that we've accumulated over the last 20 years of some of Charlotte's views and commentary and opinions, and then some of the ideas that I've sort of come up with also, together with her and then independently, of that. And so, but after we're going to be speaking, together for about 19 minutes, then, we'll go to an interview I had earlier that I had to record just with, Dave Von Kleist, that runs about 38 minutes. But I want to welcome everyone to the program. And Charlotte, what are your own personal feelings and opinions on 9/11? And tell our listening audience what are some of your keen insights and opinions on that?
Well, for me, at this point, it's still very disturbing to contemplate and to know the things that we've uncovered and discovered and that we know about the truth pertaining to 9/11, the actors, the atrocities, if you will, the crimes, the tragedies. It was a criminal event that changed the course of our nation's history and resulted in, I think, at least 7 wars, George. What do you think?
Well, something like that. We, I found that quotation out of that PNAC, that Project for New American Century.
And I remember that very well.
And it actually says that to transform America into a military dominant international nation, that maybe what would be helpful to do that would be a Pearl Harbor event that would help them in this transformation. Do you remember that?
Of course I do. And the signers to that document, or the originators of that, the Project for the New American Century,
right,
everybody who was identified as associated with that document, which they loud and proudly were, and I'm sure even in 2021, people are going to be able to find the names of what we came to call the neocons.
Right, exactly. And I went in, Charlotte, and found the actual document that they published in September 2000, which would be 1 year before 9/11. And let me read this just for 1 second. It's just a short sentence here, okay? This is talking about how they could best transform this country into more of a military international might. And here's what they say. Further, the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. So to me, that tells me that this 9/11 event was a catalyzing, earth-shaking event that changed this country. What do you think, Charlotte?
There's no question on that, George. And I would like to refresh everybody's memory that's been along for the 9/11 truth journey about our knowledge within the pop culture, the television programs at the time, the various celebrities, and the indications and the usage of 9/11, the numerology pertaining to, like, for example, there was a all kinds of things and clues that seemed to come forward in the media environment, on the television, different things. And that got a lot of people thinking and talking about how evil these people genuinely are.
Well, you know, I was sitting in this cafe, I won't say the name of it, and I actually saw I didn't see the attack on the North Building. That was only played back later. But I actually was, as we were watching on a CNN shot from the north of the North Tower, I actually saw the plane fly down towards the south in the right frame of the television camera. And then all of a sudden, there was fire coming out to the left of the North Tower, but you could tell that it was not the North Tower because of our ability to see perspective in depth. But later on, they would have a camera shot from the side, which revealed where that fire came out. And that fire came out of that corner of that south building. Then we knew there was something really going on and there were real planes hitting those towers.
Right. So around that time was the great American shift into propaganda.
Yes.
The events of 9/11 was when I became consciously aware that the television, the radio, the personalities, the celebrities, the sales, everything was profoundly fake.
Exactly, Charlotte. And what we're seeing today, and this is out of respect for all of our veterans, and Charlotte is a vet, and I am a vet, and we respect and admire all of our veterans and what they've tried to do in the different conflicts that they were recruited or drafted into, like we were in the Vietnam era. You know, we were subject to draft. I volunteered. But many of our people that I went to high school were drafted, and we lost some of them in Vietnam. But we have a high respect for every military and VA person that's retired or whatever or injured. And that we've been, you've done a lot in trying to help those people, have you not, Charlotte?
I'm sorry, George, you kind of lost me on that.
Well, in our work, in our radio work, we've reached out to all the vets and with helpful explanations of what we felt like was the truth to help them. Is that not true?
Well, they weren't necessarily our target audience, but definitely we have encouraged and been a part of the veteran community for decades now.
Well, you know, one thing that is not on the 9/11 topic, but there was a rehabilitation man out of San Diego that we had on the program to help rehabilitate vets that suffered from post-traumatic stress syndrome that were subject to maybe 9/11 or whatever the event might have been, Vietnam or later on the Persian Gulf War, you know. And so we've done some reach out to the vets, that's for sure, because of your being a veteran and myself being a veteran. But
right, well, yeah, just because you're a veteran and you are on a particular mission, we're still learning. We're still growing.
Right.
We're still expanding, and we're still recovering, and we're still enduring. To be an American veteran or a prior service military, you know, it makes you uniquely human, and most people, the vast majority that serve in the military, if they don't know it when they go in, they certainly understand and are sobered by the sacrifices that the community makes.
Right. There was a couple of profound experiences that I had along the way on this. And one of my first experiences, within days after 9/11, we had meetings over at a coffee shop. And we sat down, and my friends were telling me that, you know, the steel, you know, the fire didn't reach the enough temperature to melt the steel and so forth. And I sort of blew that off. And then a few days later, or a week or so later, I've forgotten how long, I came across a site called Serendipity. They had a photograph of the Pentagon right, you know, within hours after the attack, and there was no debris out there of any large plane. And I said to myself, this is a big lie they've already started telling. And then later on, when we went to Washington, and you remember in 2008, we went up there?
Yeah, but can I comment first about,
yeah,
I recall, by the time I had returned to Texas, and I remember my first inclination that 9/11 was not as it was being presented was when you called me, or I had called you, and you confided, you said, you know, oh my gosh, this is what my friends are saying, this is what we're hearing, this is what people are discussing. And I was just absolutely blown, my socks were blown off. But at that point, I was already committed with a military affiliation, and so I ramped up for war. I did not, you know, I got swept along with the times.
Right. And when we were flying out, I don't know if you remember this, and I probably said it before, when we were flying out of Washington D.C. in 2008, I think we had just attended the G7 or G20 meeting. We weren't able to get into the meeting to cover it because they weren't allowing anyone, but we did go, we were up there. Flying out after the meeting, early one morning, we were flying out of National Airport there, and it was before sunrise. And I was sitting on the left, and I was looking out the window. The plane was banking to the left. And I was looking out the window because you could see the ground, and you could see very vividly the Pentagon down there, and I noticed the Pentagon had some appendage on it. In other words, the shape and size of the Pentagon was oblong on one particular corner. And then I found out later it was that memorial that they built down there on the grounds right outside the Pentagon. But it was lighted, see? And so when it was lighted, it made the Pentagon shape different, okay? And I said, oh my gosh, they're continuing the saga. It's like a myth almost now. What do you think, Charlotte?
Yes, George. 9/11 is not a myth. People died. Propaganda came into full swing. The fake news absolutely came up full force. People were reacting to what was happening. It's not a myth. It happened, okay? A myth is not a fairy tale story that didn't happen. But the official story that was framed coming through the media, what the Bush administration said and did, the way the debris from the World Trade Centers was rapidly removed, where there was no investigations by the city, the state, or the county, pertaining to the reason for collapse. And we all, everybody in America during that time, we reacted to the collective sudden war footing.
Right. Well, you know, we had some good experiences in trying to work towards this truth, thing called truth. In 2010, we were in New York City. You helped put up that third light, did you not?
Well, I was present when the light went up, yes. And Richard Gage, and which Richard Gage came on the scene. I remember his story, but I want to say it was 2005, 2006.
No, it was 2010. I remember it real well.
No, Richard Gage was on the scene long before that, George.
No, I know, but I'm saying when we went to New York, it was 2010.
Oh, right, when we personally met him, right. But yeah. At that point, we...
Yeah, we knew about... Yeah, well, you actually interviewed those people earlier on, right? Yeah, earlier than that. Yeah, you had... Remember we gave you... I gave you those cell phones and stuff, huh?
Right, well, that was Stephen Jones, Professor Stephen Jones, and his entourage, yeah, when he did his presentation at the University of Texas.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
We were hot on 9/11.
Oh, we were.
As soon as we could, we started, you know, communicating to our fellow Americans and veterans and to people that there was a hustle on.
Right, exactly. But I remember I had purchased two extra cell phones. And you gave each one of those to the people you were interviewing. Then they called in to our engineers, and they tied all four of us together. You remember that?
Yeah, that's when we were actually syndicated, right?
So that was the way to actually tie all of us together live on live radio, by the way, that evening we were on Genesis Communication Network at that time. And that was the only way that we could do it, you know, efficiently, where you could stand there and be talking to them and be sort of interviewing them, you know, face to face. But then all four of us were talking over the engineering tie-in to our live program. Okay?
Right, right. You know, let's not forget, you know, how profound it was when the NIST came to the University of Texas. And they were confronted with the NASA imaging of the molten metal and the Trade Center footprint that didn't cool off, I think, till November or December.
Right.
And those men and women that became ill and sickened in an effort to help our country. But the country really came together. It was a very profound, changing time for every individual. However, in 2021, we're all challenged with the fake news.
Right, right. Well, did you ever attend that speech that Rodriguez gave? He was the janitor in the, I think, the North Building. Were you?
Yes, we attended that. Yes,
right.
I was there for that.
Well,
I was present.
So that was another thing.
I
think the Brave New Books organized that. They had a group called PNAC also. It's the same acronym, but it didn't stand for Project for New American Century. But I think that little group
right.
that they had of students got us into the ballroom of the student center there. Okay?
Right.
And,
right. Well, I'd like to make a shout out, George. Let's shout out to Harlan.
Right, right. Harlan Dietrich.
Let's shout out to Harlan Dietrich. Let's shout out to Jack Blood.
Right. We had.
I mean, it was a phenomenal time to be in the heart of Texas.
We cannot forget Alex, who went up to New York time and time again and tried to out this thing as 9/11 inside job. Well, he tried.
And it was.
Now,
that's not an inaccurate assessment.
Right, right. Now, what we did, I think, was the more important thing later on was we had Fran Shearer on our program 1 hour. And she talked about 21 articles that she had written and first published on ae911truth.org about the problem, the psychological problems of the American public waking up to 9/11 to what the real truth is. Remember that?
Yes, I do, George. It was a very profound time.
And so that interview, we've replayed it on some of our second hour several times now, but those with click offs on all 21 articles. And I suggest to all of our listeners to go in. I think we have them for this last 6 months up there on the 2021, year site to go in and listen to that. We've got about a minute left, Charlie. Any closing comments about, before we close out this segment?
Yes, I'd like to make praise for the United States of America. United we are in each state and strength, and we come together by being neighbor states. The federal government is something we all contend with. We have to manage the federal level.
Right, right. And people should just go in and not believe exactly what we're saying. Do your own research. And it's still out there, but they're slowly squeezing and censoring and doing away with sites that, like, you know what I couldn't find the other day? George Riley had a site on Gulf War illness. It's gone. I can't find it anymore. So
right, we're going to have to go start,
that's
start
how they,
using that Wayback Machine.
Right. Yeah, that can be recovered through the Wayback Machine, and I think that would be a good project for some of these young people. Anyway, I want to thank you for your commentary, Charlotte, and all your hard work and your dedication as not only a veteran but as an American citizen to the truth. So thank you very much, and good night.
Well, thank you, George.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got really a fine guest with us this evening, Dave Von Kleist. He's done so much about the 9/11 over the years, and we're going to discuss some of the projects that he worked on, he put together, to try to give us a good, truthful rendition of what really happened on that day. Welcome to our program, Dave Von Kleist.
Well, thank you, George. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, you know, you've done so much in this area. It's just really hard for me to ignore the contributions that you made here, you know?
Well, I appreciate it. And, yeah, it's kind of hard to believe that it was 20 years ago that this whole thing started and brings back some very poignant memories. Because I was obviously on the air that day. I was doing the show, The Power Hour, with my wife at the time, Joyce Riley. And as soon as the microphone went live, and that was at exactly 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Now, at that point in history, only the North Tower had been hit.
Okay.
And, so as soon as the microphone went live, I told all the listeners, hey, drop what you're doing and run to your TV, turn it on and throw a tape in and start recording. And that's what people did all over the country. And then, of course, 3 minutes later at 9:03 on live television, we saw the second tower get hit. And, needless to say, it was a horrendous day. Because I grew up in New York. I watched those towers climb into the sky and I had lots of friends there. But, anyway, what happened is, during the following 2 weeks, I think it was about 2 weeks later, George Bush was on television and, he told the American people, we got to stop showing these terrible attacks on America no more because America needs time to heal. So they stopped showing any replays of the clips. But at the same time, I started to get videotapes in the mail from all the listeners all over the country. And I ended up with a box of about 65, 70 videotapes. And I had all of the footage. I had all the networks. I had Fox, CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS. But I also got videotapes from the local surrounding areas of New York, from WPIX, WOR, WNEW, WJAR, local stations in the surrounding area. And then it occurred to me after GW said that they didn't want anybody to see those clips anymore, so we started to go through them. And what we found out was absolutely mind-boggling. So that's where the original 9/11 in plain sight video came from. And it was a compilation of video clips and photographic evidence that was, like I said, sent to me through the mail. So, and that's what sort of got this whole controversy rolling downhill.
Well, how long had you and George been on the air at that time up until 9/11? Did you start the program? What year did you start the Power Hour there?
I believe we started that in late 99, no, it was right after Y2K. That's right. It was right after the year 2000, the spring of 2000. So
okay.
We were doing the Power Hour for about a year and a half before the 9/11 attacks.
Right. I always enjoyed the levity that you brought to the program, Dave. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I try to have some fun, you know. You got, you know,
yeah.
A spoonful of, spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, as he said.
Oh, Dave, man. Well, you had quite a broadcast of what career before that? You started the Power Hour. How long was that? Were you doing that before the Power Hour?
Well, I've always been a musician. I mean, I've been a musician since I was, gosh, I was singing when I was a kid. I picked up the guitar when I was like sixth grade or something. And so I've always been a musician and a performer. And I got into broadcasting in the 70s. I ended up with my broadcasting license in 79. I was at the University of Hartford, WWUH Radio. And then I bounced around some local radio stations, and I ended up at one of the ABC affiliate television stations in New Haven, Connecticut. I was a staff announcer for WTNH, Channel 8. And that was during the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. I was working there during the first Gulf War. And that's sort of what lit my butt on fire, because when I was working at the TV station, we could watch the raw feeds coming in from overseas during the first Gulf War.
Right.
And what we saw with our own eyes live was completely different than what they were telling everybody on the ABC News. So, I mean, that sort of got my head cocked to one side. I said, hey, wait a second. They're lying through their teeth, you know, because I was, one day I was watching the feeds come in, and I saw our military dozers dozing bodies of men, women, and children into a common grave behind a backdrop of apartment buildings and playgrounds. And that night, Peter Jennings reported that there were no civilian casualties because America's using smart bombs, and they were lying through their teeth. So that's what got me really going as far as, you know, taking a look at what was going on with the first Gulf War. And, of course, all of our veterans were coming home sick, and it was just a horrendous situation. And that's when I met Joyce. And because I started a little talk show on a little radio station in Waterbury, Connecticut, WATR, and I had Joyce on as a guest. Anyway, we found out that we were totally in alignment in a lot of these different issues, and that's when we joined forces. And we got together in 96, and that's when we were traveling all over the country, you know, trying to help the veterans. We were speaking at American Legion posts and VFWs and schools and synagogues and churches and you name it. We were traveling all over the place. And anyway, we ended up settling in Missouri, and that's when we started the Power Hour radio show with the GCN network.
Right.
So yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, so we were already working together as a team long before the 9/11 attacks.
Well, you know where I first met you and Joyce was in Austin, Texas at the Chariot Inn. Okay.
All right.
And you probably don't remember that, but y'all were on the Gulf War issues, illnesses. And you got up and played your music, some of it for the first time, in beautiful pieces there. But they were all very patriotic, and that's when I first met you and Joyce. In fact, I bought some of those federal manuals or reports from her. She had a table at the back. And you were up there singing. And both of you spoke real well and real clearly about what was going on the Gulf War. You know, they were trying to pass it off as some syndrome and all this. And you and George were really exposing that whole thing as a real illness caused by the biochemical stuff that was being bombarded through those Scud missiles, you know?
Yeah, and plus the depleted uranium and the experimental vaccinations and the exposures to chemicals and biologicals that we had shipped over to the Middle East illegally. I mean, there were so many crimes that were committed during that period of time, and that's what basically set both of us on fire. We had to get the truth out because our veterans' lives were on the line.
Well, a friend of mine, Randall Mock, got to know George Riley in Houston. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I hope he's doing well.
He's got the Truth Seekers here in Austin. It's been a group it came out of Houston. And I think George Riley and Randall had it together down there. But he knew George way back then. And, of course, I only became acquainted with you when you came into Austin on the Gulf War, programs.
The first one,
you know. And then y'all had a Y2K, they had Y2K meetings, and I think y'all came up for that at the Luby's, and then they transferred it over to FERS and so forth. And but I remember going to your documentary, 9/11 in Plain Sight at St. Edward's University. Do you remember that?
Vaguely. I mean, I remember we were going all over the place.
I know you were in that coach that y'all had. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you pulled it up there at the back of the, it's a deaf school. Okay. Where you had it at.
It's Now I remember. Vicki Karp was there too.
Well, that was our first person we interviewed on this program, The Secret Truth on Election Fraud and Irregularities, with Vicki Karp and her partner on that book. I think we just interviewed Vicki Karp. Her partner was out of pocket for that interview.
Uh huh.
Mike said you are his hero. Mike Hansen told me that today. Yeah. He offices next door to me down here in Gonzales area. This is where I've been working out of lately. But he said, tell you that you are his hero.
Oh, bless his heart. Yeah. I thought Alex was his hero.
well, you know, he produced a bunch of the access for Alex, okay? But Mike did over 2,000 access programs here in Austin, and Alex was part of, or hundreds of those programs for Alex, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
But also, they had you and George, I think, on the air several times, maybe, over the years, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember Joyce and I went to Austin, and this is when Alex was doing a cable access show.
Right, right. And that was produced by Mike Hansen. See what I mean?
Yeah, I remember. Gosh, it's hard to believe that was 25 years ago. My gosh.
I know. And I wasn't that familiar with Alex or Mike at the time. Of course, since then, we've become good friends. You know what I mean?
And then
I started in 2006 along with Charlotte Littlefield. I couldn't bring her in on this for some reason. My Skype wasn't working quite right on for a group chat, you know. So I just called you separately. But we go way back, you know, and I started a program in Austin in 1990, okay? And we started a Patriot meetings there. We went through Oklahoma. Before that, the Randy Weaver, Oklahoma, the Waco, all of that stuff over the years. And in the 90s, 1990s when we started that. So we've been on some of these issues for three decades or more. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But you and George put together 9/11 in Plain Sight. How long did it take you to produce that, Dave?
Well, we started after, like I mentioned, we got all those videotapes, and for the first year or so, I wasn't sure what to do with them. But then we ended up getting William Lewis. He had relocated into our area, and of course, he's a videographer. So we got together with William, and William and I produced it. I mean, this was basically my baby here. Joyce also had a project that she wanted to work on, and she eventually made another video with William, and that was called Beyond Treason. And that's you can see that in its entirety on YouTube. And but anyway, so the first production that the Power Hour made was 9/11 in Plain Sight. And then the next production was Beyond Treason, and that was Joyce's project.
Okay.
And then the third Power Hour project was something, it was a compilation of all the different people who Joyce and I had been talking to through the years, and that one was called, I'm having a senior moment now, A One Nation Under Siege.
Really? One Nation, okay.
Yeah, that was the third production.
Okay.
And then during that period of time, like I said, the 9/11 in Plain Sight video came out in 2004, and that went viral. It was all over the world. It was on TV in Europe. It was on TV in Australia, in Japan, but not here, of course, in the United States. But during that period of time, from the release of 9/11 in Plain Sight, it was a couple of years Of course, I mean, I got all kinds of attacks. I mean, with a name like Von Kleist, of course, I must be a Nazi or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Right. Well, you're actually from a Prussian, a very aristocratic Prussian family, are you not?
I don't think it's German. It's German background.
Well, German, yeah. Well, Prussia, Germany, that was all together there.
Yeah.
But I got that Von Kleist, and y'all were aristocrats there, I thought, in that area.
Well, I got nothing to do with that. I mean, that's general.
I know that. But I'm just saying, you got an old family line that goes way back. That's all I'm trying to make a point of.
Yeah, I got it. But no, they were trying to say that I was, you know, a Manchurian candidate. I was a CIA mole. I was, like I said, a skinhead or a Nazi. I was a Mossad agent too. Yeah, right.
Oh okay. My God, Dave.
I mean, but the thing was, what happened is during that period of time, a couple of years, you know, after 9/11 in plain sight was released, again, during the previous years, back in the 90s, before the 9/11 attack, Joyce and I had made a lot of contacts in the military. We had a lot of friends, veterans, and active duty, all branches of service, et cetera, et cetera. So they all knew who we were. They all knew that we are, you know, we're patriots to the bone. And so I started getting contacted by people in the military. They said, hey, Dave, you're asking some pretty tough questions with that 9/11 in plain sight video. And I said, yeah, I'm asking questions that a lot of people don't want asked, let alone answered.
Right.
I said, hey, would you like to talk about it? And they said, sure. So that's how the 9/11 ripple effect video started. I traveled around and I talked to General Albert Stubblebine, Colonel George Nelson, Colonel Glenn McDonald, talked to airline pilots like Russ Wittenberg and Glenn Stanish, and interviewed all these people. And that's where the 9/11 ripple effect video came from. So I think that the ripple effect video is a little bit more powerful than the 9/11 in plain sight, because now we have the experts backing up some of the information that was being put out there from 9/11 in plain sight. So and then things got really strange, and I had to go back east to take care of my mom, who was going around the Golden Corner, and unfortunately Joyce and I got sideways on a couple of issues, and we ended up splitting up and divorcing. And William Lewis took advantage of the situation, and he blocked me from selling or distributing my own videos.
Oh my God!
That was a rough period of time, and that's when I just said, "Hey, heck with this whole thing! If I can't trust the people in my own foxhole, then what's the point in fighting the good fight?" So I, and not only that, but there were so many people in the 9/11 Truth Movement that were in it for the wrong reasons. They wanted to get the praise and the accolades and the ego strokes, and they wanted to make the money. And you know, the thing is, I'll be honest with you, you know, I never got a penny, not a penny, out of the 9/11 ripple effect, and William took everything from the 9/11 in plain sight. And to be honest with you, you can go on eBay, people are out there selling the videos, and I have no idea who they are, and I don't care, because it was never about the money. Same thing with my music. I got 3 albums out there. People are out there selling my music on eBay, and I have no idea who they are. But I really don't care. Just as long as it gets distributed and people start listening and people start paying attention, maybe learn something. So, because for me, it was never about the money. Money corrupts. And unfortunately, that's what happened to some of the people in my circle. So,
that's a tribute to you accomplishing these things under adverse conditions at times, and a lot of criticism, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I took a lot of hits. There's no doubt about it. But hey, look, I've developed a pretty thick skin over the years. But I always consider the source, and I also take a look at what is motivating people to do what they do and say what they say. So, like I said, you know, I started to become a pariah in the 9/11 Truth Movement, because I would not let go of some of these questions. Now, one of the controversies was the issue about whether or not there was something attached to the belly of the plane. So they would
call me a pod.
I think they were calling, yeah, a pod. Yeah, I was a pod person. That's what I was.
Oh, okay.
And they said, and the philosophy was, well, if you don't know what it is, you shouldn't be talking about it. So you need to take it out of your video. And I said, wait a minute. If we don't talk about it, how will we ever know what it is? So I refuse to take out the stuff about the pod and about the flash. And that was the other big thing, the flash that occurred just before the planes hit the towers. Nobody wanted to discuss that. And I, as a matter of fact, when Dylan Avery came out with his loose change video, his first edition, as a matter of fact, we were going to help him distribute that because we had the fulfillment center all in place with the Power Hour, and we were going to distribute it for him. But before he started going into mass distribution, the 9/11 community basically gave him the same pressure that they were putting on me. You got to take that stuff out. You can't talk about the pod or the flash or anything like that. And like I said, I wouldn't take it out. So I became somewhat of a black sheep or a pariah in the 9/11 truth movement. And Dylan says he took it out for time restraints. So whatever, if that's why he took it out, that's fine. But I found that when he came out with the loose change second edition, and that was the one that was widely distributed, the footage and the question about the flash and the pod had been deleted. So he became the darling of the 9/11 truth movement, and that was the big video that was out there, quoting out the truth. And I more or less, took a back seat and was, like I said, I was somewhat of the black sheep. And so I'm fine. I just, the heck with you guys. I'll just give you the middle finger and you go ahead and move on. I don't care. So were you invited to some
of the 9/11 truth conferences that occurred? I was at the 2010, 11, and 12 in New York, Toronto, and Vancouver. Were you in the New York one or not? I don't remember.
I was in the New York one. I think it was in 08. I was there.
An earlier one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I was an earlier one, but after my mom had, I had to put my mom in a nursing home, and after the divorce and that got nasty. Joyce pulled me off the radio show, and I never got a chance to say goodbye to the listeners or thank them for the years of support.
Yeah.
And I was just ready to go on the air, and Joyce told him, say, hey, cut him off. Don't put him on.
Really?
So I was just gone. I was just, never got a chance to say goodbye. And it was a really tough period in my life, watching my mom go nuts and then going through the divorce and getting thrown off the show. And then William Lewis took control of all the videos and everything. And I got a phone call from one of the listeners in South America, and he said, okay. Hey, Dave, you want to come? You can come down here and stay down here, or stay for a week, a month, a year. I don't care. So I said, okay, why not? So I bailed, and I went down to Argentina. I was down there for about 6.5 years.
Okay. How was that experience for you? Was that a pretty good experience or what?
Yeah, it was quite an adventure. I will tell you, that's a whole other story. Maybe get into some other.
That's another book, or another documentary.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding, yeah. I landed on my feet, but I was standing up to my knees in crap. So it was quite an interesting thing. But I was done. I just, I said, that's it. I didn't want to be Dave Von Kleist anymore. No more radio Dave Von Kleist. No more, patriotic balladeer Dave Von Kleist. No more documentary producer Dave Von Kleist. I don't want to be that guy anymore. I just want to go back to my musical roots and live in peace. And, spread the love. So that's why I ejected. Some people say, oh, Dave, you're a coward. You bailed and all that kind of stuff. Hey, look at all my resources were gone. Everything. So I had, I said, well, what the heck is the point of staying here? I might as well go down there and see what happens for 2012.
I did. What are your views on the thermite thing that architects and engineers came up with? What's your view on that?
Well, I have no doubt that there were explosives, thermite, all that stuff. I don't disagree with the concept of the direct energy weapons.
Okay.
I don't disagree with a lot. I mean, there's so many questions. There's so much data that we don't have to come to a definitive answer one way or the other. So I don't close the door on any of the stuff that's coming out there, But I will say that, you know, that I can't get on board with the people who say that there were no planes. You know, there's the no planers out there. They say it was all CGI and it was all holograms and all that stuff. No, I can't buy into
that. Well, there were planes that did hit those buildings. I think the 750, the Boeing that supposedly hit the Pentagon was not there. I don't see that happening. You know.
Well, yeah, but I mean, as far as, you know, if the people are saying that it was all created with holograms and
stuff. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you, Dave, on that. Yeah, I know. There's all kinds of theories on that.
Yeah, well, I got to ask the question. I mean, if that was the case, then why would there be, appear to be something attached to the plane? And not only that, but why would there be a flash? You know, those are all questions that, you know, that are inconsistent with the concept of creating a video CGI created fiction. Why would they insert things that would raise questions like that?
Right.
So, you know, and there are other things, like I've seen the video when we made the 9/11 in plain sight video, we were focused in on where the plane was striking the building, which is what drew his attention to the flash and the pod and all that. But there was also an issue about the video where the wing appears to pass behind a building on the left.
Right.
I didn't notice that at the time. And to be honest, I don't know enough about videography and the technology behind it to explain how that could happen. So, you know, like
right.
I said, I don't know the answers to that. But regardless, you know, it could be a video glitch. It could be something. I don't know. Everything should be on the table. Everything. And,
you know, my experience was I was sitting in a coffee shop that I used to go to every morning. And I was getting ready to go back to my office, and someone said, "Hey, there's something on CNN," and up came the video. But it was of the North Tower from the north perspective, and you could not see the South Tower because the North Tower was closer. Okay,
right.
We were sitting there watching the North Tower burn, of course. But off to my right, I actually saw real time live. The plane flying south. Okay?
Right.
And then all of a sudden we waited a few minutes and we saw fire coming out to the left. Okay? Where the North Tower was, but you couldn't see, but you could tell with the perspective that our eyes have that it wasn't the North Tower where the fire came out, but the fire came out from the South Tower, but we didn't know that until they got another perspective from, of the South Tower. See what I mean?
Yeah. No, it was really hard to put those puzzle pieces together, these different angles.
That proved to me, though, there was a real plane, and we saw it. I saw it live, and there was this fire coming out, and those things did happen. Got me? My idea about the South Tower is if the plane was being remotely controlled, the turn, they weren't quite coming out of that turn when they hit that corner, that's why they hit the corner. See what I mean?
Right.
So they were too close to the South Tower when they made the turn, and they weren't able to straighten up the plane and go directly into the South Tower, so they almost missed it. And I think it was remotely controlled for that reason. Okay?
Yeah. Well, like I said, these are all questions that I don't know if we'll ever get the answers to. Because I mean, now we've got 20 years have gone by, and of course a lot of the evidence has been destroyed. Of course they did everything they could to get rid of as much evidence as they could, shipping all the debris off to China. And so I know there's some things we may never find out.
They've actually transformed this into a myth now, 9/11 mythology or myth. And that's how they're kowtowing everybody. See?
Oh, yeah. History revisionism is always happening.
I pulled out of the PNAC. There was a white paper entitled Rebuilding America's Defenses, Strategy, Forces, and Resources for a New Century. I don't know if you ever saw this. It's a report of the Project for a New American Century. dated September 2000.
Right. We need a new Pearl Harbor.
And I'm just, that's exactly. And let me just read this short little paragraph. Yeah, they're talking about transforming our existing military industrial complex into a very fighting force internationally and making it stronger and building it bigger. And it goes, here's where it begins. Further, the process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor.
Exactly.
So that's exactly what we, in looking at this from a strategic basis, this provided them a mechanism and a means to begin to lock down this country. That's what I see.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's, you just look what happened after that, you know. I mean, we got the terrorist bill. And, of course, we know that we got a whole new big agency, the Department of Homeland Security, and we got all those security, all the security technology now all over the airports, of course, to stop terrorism, but they haven't found one terrorist, not that I'm aware of. But the only crimes being committed through the TSA is by the TSA agents, away from what I'm hearing,
Right. So. Well, what's discouraging at times, I watched all the ceremonies this morning, and I've been watching the build-up to this. All these four-star generals or whoever, they're all talking about American Flight 77 crashing into the Pentagon. They're still projecting this mythology and this lie. That's what I see. The top-level people are, see?
Well, you know, sometimes the truth is too ugly to face.
Right. And then this latest revelation about this declassification of this Saudi Arabian intelligence or data, well, that's just a false rabbit trail to continue the idea that it was a foreign group that did this attack. That's all that is. See what I mean?
Yeah.
And there was a CIA guy, won't even mention his name, that was head of the Berlin desk, that knew about the Hamburg group, Mohammed Atta and them. But they said they were monitoring them at the time before 9/11, but they had no real good intelligence about what that group. And that group there was a Saudi Arabian group. So they brought those guys in to take the fall for 9/11. That's the way I see it.
Yeah. Well, there's so many different angles on
right,
this whole
right,
thing.
Right. So, are you going to be doing some other interviews today? You said.
Well, yeah. A friend of mine has started up a network. It's the One Republic Network.
Okay.
And,
good.
So, OneRepublicNetwork.com. There's all kinds of platforms that carry the show. And I'll be on there. It'll be, 6 o'clock Mountain Time, which would be, 7 o'clock your time? 8 o'clock Eastern.
Okay.
So, we'll be revisiting some of the stuff that we're talking about right now and showing a couple of video clips and, reviewing photographs, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So,
do you have any immediate plans for doing any more radio broadcasts or programs or anything or what?
Well, like I said, when I left the States, I swore I would never go back to being, the full-time, Monday through Friday, 3-hour daily radio show. I said, no, I'd never do that. So I've been toying around with the idea of doing a weekly show, on the ORN, on the One Republic Network. But it's in the process of developing itself at this point. So not quite sure how that's going to work out, but, I may be throwing my hat back in the ring at some point, but it won't be it'll never be the same as the Power Hour. I mean, the Power Hour was a very unique situation. Joyce and I had a amazing chemistry going on that show. And I'm real proud of those years. I mean, that was a good solid decade of broadcasts. I'm real proud of the fact that, we did accomplish an awful lot during those years. But I'm not going to be going back to be doing that again. I haven't even followed the Power Hour. I mean, Joyce passed away, like, what, 4 years ago now.
Right.
I guess there was somebody else who was doing the show. I find it rather curious that nobody's contacting me from the Power Hour, say, hey, Dave, it was 20 years ago. You want to come on the show? You know, so I don't know.
I know that it seems like they would have reached out to you because of the 9/11 20-year anniversary.
Well, I also think that there is, you know, the people who were involved in the Power Hour right now, they were there during the period of time where Joyce and I started to part our philosophical ways.
Okay.
Like I said, the Power Hour, you know, we were tremendously successful. We had the Power Mall and, you know, we were selling documents and books and videos and health products and all kinds of stuff. And we had quite a lucrative business going on there. But what happened is that the focus got redirected away from helping the veterans to making money. And when that happens, that's where, you know, like I said, money corrupts. Money corrupts every time.
Right.
And I've already told you what my feeling about that is. I don't care. You know, people are out there selling my stuff, making money. Fine. Go for it, you know.
Right.
And I'm just not money oriented. You know, these days I'm living off of, I'm on Social Security and whatever I can get, playing a gig here and there, and occasionally do some narrations for instructional videos.
But you've always had an excellent radio voice, Dave.
Yeah, well, it's just something God gave me, and I figured I had to use it. So
right. I've always been. Yeah, you have the kind of voice that people will listen to. You know, some people on radio, you don't want to listen to them. But your voice is the kind of voice that engenders respect and attention. I get the word attention. It gets people's attention because it's a very good voice, you know, for radio. See what I mean?
Well, you know, like I said, it was one of those gifts that God gave me. And I'm glad he did. You know, that's why I became a broadcaster. And I've always been a singer. And
right.
Might as well use it if you got it, you know.
Right.
Use
right.
it or lose it. So.
Okay. Well, I certainly did enjoy you being on the program this evening. Is there anything else about 9/11 or anything that's going on in this country that you want to talk about or express some kind of opinion on?
Well, there is one thing that I just want to share with the listeners, because I do get people to contact me all the time and, what are we going to do about this? You know, so, I am going to have to scoot here, but all I say is, look at, just get right with your friends, with your family, and with your God. Just be straight with it. Just be straight with everybody so that you can look at yourself in the mirror and know that you've done the right thing. That's the most important thing.
Okay.
So, anyway.
Well, I think that's very important to take heed, you know what I mean? And
Well, that's all we got, really. It's just you, your family, and your God, you know? That's how it works.
That's what I was trying to do. I want to thank you very much for this evening, and wish you the best of luck in the future. Okay.
Well, thank you, and God bless. And for all the listeners out there who remember, thank you for your years of support and everything that you did for us to help the Power Hour be as successful as it was, and for the 9/11 videos to have gotten out the way they did, because it was definitely, you know, folks like yourself who spread the word and got it out there. Without your support, we wouldn't have had the Power Hour either.
Well, you did wonderful work with the Power Hour, and I was an avid listener to the Power Hour, but I've listened to it lately. It's just not the same as what when you and George were doing it. Not the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
All kinds of change.
Okay. Well, good evening. Thank you very much, Dave.
All right.
Okay.
God bless.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.